This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Back with another week of the TJ and Todd's Tailgate. College football still going on, as always. Still some controversies going around. I saw FSU Twitter just tweeted out, as we record here on Wednesday afternoon, that they happened to go past the Joe's Crab Shack. They didn't go to the Joe's Crab Shack in Louisville, but go past it on their walkthrough before their game against Louisville tomorrow. So we'll go with this here. First topic for this week's episode, Todd. The playoff came out yesterday evening. ESPN released it. The top four teams are Mississippi State, Florida State, Auburn, and I'm forgetting team number three right now. This is horrible. This is very embarrassing. Todd, who's that third
Auburn
team?
And Ole Miss. It's Mississippi State, Florida State, Auburn, and Ole Miss.
Okay. That's right, because it's who are the Mac? Because it's 1-4, Mississippi State, Ole Miss. That's right, and Auburn and Florida State would be 2 and 3. Okay, so agree, disagree? Should you know what's your first take off of the first release of the playoffs?
So far this year, I agree with it. I think it's not going to finish this way because some of these teams still have to play each other.
Obviously,
the three SEC teams. I mean, how cool would it be though to see Mississippi State and Ole Miss play? You know, right now with the seeding, they play in the playoff first spot in the national championship game. I mean, that would just be awesome to watch, but it's impossible this year.
Right.
I definitely agree. Last week, we kind of wrote off the idea that Ole Miss would stay in this playoff picture for now, at least, after if they dropped that game against the LSU. So
yeah.
I'm happy with the voters throwing them a bone this far. They've had a great season.
And it's weird, you know, last week they did lose that. It wasn't really a heartbreaker when you think about it. To LSU, unless I'm mistaken something, you know, your thoughts on the end of that Ole Miss LSU game are what?
Just a poor coaching by Hugh Freeze, regrettable performance by Bo Wallace when it was crunch time, but that stuff just happens. I mean, it's heartbreaking if you're a fan of Ole Miss, and I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast has probably seen the viral YouTube video of the milk jug girl from Ole Miss. Ole Miss and LSU, it's a lot of people outside of SEC don't know that that's a pretty bitter rivalry between Ole Miss and LSU, and it's mostly on Ole Miss's side because LSU is a dominant program. They're usually in that top 10 picture each year. They've won a national championship in the recent past. This was a chance for Ole Miss, if they would have won that game, to really plant their flag this year as a legitimate title contender. But as it stands, you got to think every year you're going to lose a game. It's very rare that a team outside of some of the real elite blue bloods go undefeated.
Right.
And as a coach, especially as a young coach like Hugh Freeze, you can just hope to learn from something like this where you kind of put your kicker and your team in a bad spot when it really mattered. And for Bo Wallace, he's had such a great year. He started off kind of cold. I didn't really buy into the hype, but he's been playing great. And there was he dropped the ball late, but a great quarterback will learn from this. He'll come back next week bigger, better, and stronger. A great coach like Hugh Freeze has got a lot of great years left in him, hopefully at Ole Miss. He'll learn from this mistake, and you hopefully don't see it again down the line. That is just, they're going to drop a game, and there's really no shame in losing in Death Valley, no matter how hard it seems and hurts for them right now.
No, I definitely agree with that one. And it was only a three-point game. You know, it's a long field goal. We've seen what college kickers can do, you know, from not just this year, in years past. College kickers, they are not the most reliable source of getting points. So, I don't blame him for going for that win at the end. It did come up to where he threw in a double coverage, and it was still short of the goal line. But still, it's a 53-yard field goal, and, you know, just ask Alabama and Nick Saban and their fans of what a 53-yard field goal can do when you're on the road. I mean, it wouldn't have resulted in the same thing, but it's not the most guaranteed thing as, say, getting Jason Elam back there and kicking a 53-yard field goal. You know, Elam's kind of retired. But I do want to bring up one other thing you just said, that viral video of the milk jug girl. Todd, I don't know if you're – I know you're not married, but you're not in a relationship right now, are you?
I am, yeah.
You are. Okay, great. Good. So you can, so you'll be relating this one. And this is for anybody listening that is in a relationship as well. My wife and I, she's from Indianapolis, I'm from Pittsburgh. We just had Steelers-Colts this past weekend. Great game. Steelers won. I was happy. What I didn't do, and Todd, as a married guy, I'm giving you a little advice here. Do not, first off, do not video record it. Second, do not rub it in her face, especially if you guys have been drinking all day. That's just horrible. Todd, you agree that it, both of those things, albeit really funny, and I'm glad I didn't do it, horrible decision to poke fun at your missus and also video record, you know, a terrible loss.
Yeah, I don't think I'll do that, but the great thing is that my girlfriend and I are both Mizzou alums.
So okay.
What really matters to me is college football and basketball, and we both cheer for the same team.
So all right.
We went to like a Braves versus Cardinals game earlier this year, and of course the Cardinals won, but that kind of stuff I can let slide. But, you know, when it comes to Mizzou and college sports, yeah, there would definitely be things flying in the house. So I'm happy that we both cheer for the same team.
Agreed. Well, and also, if you guys do happen to go to Busch Stadium, make sure you spell it the correct way, B-U-S-C-H, not B-U-S-H. I don't want to see you and your girlfriend on Best Fans St. Louis Twitter feed.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great Twitter feed, by the way.
It is. Yeah, just make sure you spell it correctly. If you guys take a selfie at Busch Stadium and, you know, you happen to be there, spell it correctly for your sake. And also, don't throw things when you get upset at losses. Just don't. It's not going to be a good look afterwards.
Yeah, I'll try my best.
All right. So, other part of the playoff here, Mississippi State. Fact or fiction, real quick, they will make it undefeated and still be that number one seed come the end of the playoff, or come the end of the regular season.
I will say fiction because they've got the tougher slate of the two Mississippi schools.
They do.
They, of course, got the head-to-head against Ole Miss, but what they've got is that tricky game at Alabama. Mm-hmm. So if I had to flip a coin or, you know, kind of bet on one of these teams losing, I think Florida State, you know, they're in the clear. Auburn, they've got a tough play, too, because they've also got to play Alabama. But
they do.
The Mississippi schools, that game against Alabama, obviously going into Tuscaloosa is not a desirable place to play. And then going to Ole Miss is also not a great place to play.
And Florida State, they have this game against Louisville on the road tomorrow night, which we talked to in the beginning with, you know, the Crab Legs and Joe's Crab Shack. Is this their last chance to have a loss before the end of the season? If not that, the end of the, you know, the ACC title game?
I think so, because they've got, after this, they've got in Virginia. I once thought this might have been a trap game, but I don't think so anymore. At Miami, we're still waiting for Miami to find the
floor. Yeah.
You know, BC had a great game against USC earlier this year, but they've kind of, you know, regressed to the norm. And then Florida, well, it's a rivalry game, so you never know what's going to happen. But
right.
Florida is one of the more pathetic teams in the Power 5 conference. So, yeah, I think this is really the last test they have.
And then, you know, Duke. It looks like Duke's a pretty good team this year. You know, any chance that Duke knocks them off in the – at not really their backyard, but they are playing in Charlotte. You know, I'm not sure geographically how close that is to Cameron. But, I mean, it is in North Carolina. They are playing in Charlotte. I'm not sure how well, you know, the Cameron crazies can transfer to football, but you give a chance for Duke to knock them off in the ACC title game, say that they hold serve and come out of the Coastal.
Well, the tangible and X factor with Florida State is who knows what will happen inside that program.
Mm.
Between them running up, you know, what is that, you know, Carlos Williams right now.
Right.
In the spotlight, Jameis Winston, he might be a little jealous right now that he's not in the headline. So who knows what kind of trouble he'll be in or what else is going underneath the surface there at Florida State. So that's kind of the X factor. They're clearly a superior team to Duke, although it's a great story in itself that Duke's having another really good year
right.
for the football program this year. But who knows what that team will look like on the field by the time they meet Duke, if they do in fact meet Duke. So I think they're clearly the best team in the ACC, and it's not even close. But
yeah.
Florida State seems to be doing everything they can to shoot themselves in the foot and kind of stumble over their own feet before the championship game. So
yeah.
We'll have to wait and see on that one.
You know, and when I said they walked past that Joe's Crab Shack, I really wish Winston would have taken – they would have actually gone into the restaurant, the chain restaurant, and we could have got a picture of Winston with a crab, you know, a Joe's Crab Shack bib around his neck. Just for – or holding up crab legs. Why not? Why, if you're going to be if you're going to be the villain of the season, like last night's 30 for 30 about the Boz, if you're going to be a villain, go 100% with it. Even though it seems like Winston doesn't want to be a villain and wants to be liked by everybody – you know what? Embrace who you are. Embrace the hate. Exactly. And just, you know, become that heel wrestler. Become Seth Rollins. You know, start saying you're the best and you're the future and let Jimbo be the head of the authority. I think that's a good idea, right?
Yeah, I don't think anybody at this point in time thinks that Florida State, at least on the athletic side, is an institution of the highest integrity or moral fiber. So there's no point in trying to kind of reverse the hole you dug yourself this year. In the last calendar year, between all the stuff with Demas Winston, now with Carlos Williams, there's no point in trying to about face and make yourself be something you're not. You know, they're a win at all costs school, and they should embrace that.
Right. So we had a guest on this week, Sean Adams from ESPN Austin. You can catch him every day in Austin on AM 1300 of the Zone from 2 to 4 with the Adams Theory, also the Longhorn Network on the show this week to talk about the college football playoffs, Todd Gurley, and Winston himself in this situation. So we're going to go to that interview right now. I'll be back in a second. On the show this week, we have a special guest, you know, from ESPN Austin, from the Longhorn Network, Mr. Longhorn Network, I guess you could say that. He may go against that last claim, but anytime I turn on that channel on my AT&T U-verse, there he is, bald head and all, at a Texas State game or covering what's going on the 40 acres. But from AM 1300 The Zone, the host of the Adams Theory, Sean Adams. Sean, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to join the tailgate.
Man, anytime. How are you doing?
I'm all right. More importantly, though, how's everything going on in the club volleyball world?
Yeah, my daughter's season is about to kick off here pretty quick. I think she had a voluntary practice. She has an official practice starting, I think, next week. So she still plays for the club, Austin Juniors.
Right.
And, she's having a good time. She's on a 13 team, so I'm broke, but she's having a good time.
For those unaware, I've had Sean on my personal show, the TJ Macklin, the Sports Half Hour, which in previous times we've talked about the club volleyball scene. I used to coach 13 and 14-year-olds, and Sean's daughter, she's now 13, right?
Yeah, she'll be 13. She'll be 13 next in a couple of weeks, but she plays on a 13 team.
Gotcha. And, you know, the trials and tribulations of going to Dallas. I've been there for the big tournament at the end of the year and having a parent come at me with smoke coming out of every orifice of her face, wondering why I pulled out her little daughter when we're down 20-6 to get another kid some playing time. Sean, I'm sure you'll be that parent with smoke coming out of all of your orifices wondering why the coach pulled out your kid, right?
You know what's funny is I am so not that parent because, you know, I've been an athlete, I've coached, I've been an assistant AD. I am the guy that sits in the stands. I will say this, you know, my son is a year older than my daughter, plays eighth grade football, and I have told people in the stands, I wish my son played field hockey.
Yeah.
Because I could sit there and just cheer.
Right.
And I know what a goal looks like, but I don't know what good offense is. I don't know what good defense is.
Right.
I don't know anything about field hockey. But when he happens to play football, the sport to which I work 80, 90 hours a week, it's tough to look at middle school football sometimes.
I definitely agree with you that one, and especially with Texas because they have to be a teacher or work at the school to be a coach. So I'm sure there's a lot of times where you do, like you just said, want to go on the field and say you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, and but you know, you try to support. And I would never, you know, I'm always telling my kids, hey, try this when we're at home. I'd never say a negative word to my kids about their coaches because I don't want them setting themselves up to make excuses for the rest of their life by blaming a coach. But it is a struggle sometimes. But it's a struggle for every kid out there. And my kid's just part of the team. My kid's no different than anybody else. So I kind of sit on my hands and sit there and shut up and cheer. Luckily, he's on a really good team, so they may have their struggles in certain areas, but they usually kick everybody's heads in.
Right. So speaking of, we'll segue into the coachings. The two coaches on the hot seat right now, one being Brady Hoke at Michigan, the other Will Muschamp at Florida. You know, is it one thing that fans nowadays are too eager to jump the shark and want to fire the coach, whereas they should just give it time and let the program play out? Or in this case with Hoke and Muschamp, there needs to be a change at their universities.
Yeah, the struggle for Hoke is that there is literally nothing working.
Right.
And he is dealing with some of the same structure stuff that Texas is dealing with.
Hmm.
So what's happening at Michigan is Urban Meyer in Ohio State is doing really good, and Mark D'Antonio, the usually little brother over at Michigan State, is kicking their head in, going for two, because he couldn't go for three, and he's owning the state. He's getting the kids from Detroit Cast Tech now. He's making magic moves. He's the only guy probably in the Big Ten with a shot at the playoff, and you juxtapose that against Brady Hoke, where it looks like he's not paying attention because he doesn't wear a headset.
Oh, yeah.
So it looks like he's not paying attention to the offensive play calls. So when the play calls are bad, people are saying, why aren't you involved? It just seems like not much is going on. Now, the other issue on the other side with the other coach, Will Muschamp, is Florida's different. I have my own opinions about Northern schools and their probability for success over time.
Right.
They've been the workforce, the labor force is transitioning south since the car industry tanked, and then the rubber industry tanked in Ohio, and then the steel industry tanked in Pennsylvania. A bunch of people moved south. I'm not sure all the cold weather states are coming back to football.
Hmm.
You see people that are struggling, the old historical program. You know, Nebraska's not getting that county scholarship back, and they're not getting Prop 48 kids anymore. They're not getting Tommy Frazier back.
Right.
They're not getting the Peter Brothers out of New Jersey anymore. They're not getting Lawrence Phillips out of Southern California anymore. It's just not happening because Tommy Phillips from Bradenton, Florida, is not going to Nebraska anymore. He's going to go somewhere else. He's going to go somewhere in the South. So I'm not sure that a lot of the Northern schools are going to make it back. I think Michigan can be one of them, but a lot of them won't. The new programs, think about this. The new programs in college football, where are they at? UTSA, Texas State, Florida Atlantic, Florida International. Lamar moved up to Division I. My alma mater, Abilene Christian, moved up to Division I this year. They just beat Troy State in Alabama a couple weeks ago.
Hmm.
So all the newness in football is in the South. There are no new schools in the North because the population shifted South, the workforce shifted South, and the players shifted South, and the sunny states are going to win. So when you talk about Florida, the problem with Will Muschamp is he's a defensive coach. That's why I laugh with people when they say, man, they might come get Charlie Strong. They're not going to trade one defensive coach for another one. It's like politics. If the country is too liberal for a while, you get a conservative president. Then if it's conservative for a while, then you get a liberal president. So Will Muschamp went in. He hired Charlie White, horrible decision. And then he got Brett Peace. Wasn't a great decision. And then he got the guy from Duke that's there now, and they still can't play offense. So that's going to be his issue because I think Will Muschamp is done, and I think he'll be great. All the Aggies down here think he should be their next DC.
Ooh.
I don't think that's happening either, but I think there'll be a change at both schools.
Well, do they at least make it to the rest of the season? Does Hoke make it to the Ohio State game? And, you know, what happens if they upset Urban Meyer after Urban and company beat Michigan State and they look like they're on the pathway to not only a Big Ten championship but also a playoff berth? Does that give Hoke at least one more year?
I don't think it does. And let me be honest with you. I don't think they can beat Ohio State anyway.
No.
But look, we've seen it all happen. I mean, we've seen upsets happen. We've seen a lot of things happen. So it could happen. It'll be a struggle for me. I didn't think Kansas State would go on the road and beat Oklahoma a few weeks ago, but
that's
they did.
True.
So it could always happen. I think if Hoke stays there, the only thing he's proven is the job might be too big for him and it might be too much. And that sucks. I think there are jobs that might be too big for me. And there might be a job that's too big for you. We have it. That's just the reality. But people want to make it seem like you're being personal, and you're not. There's a playoff for a reason. The stakes are high. The money is high. And you have to think about this. If you got a school that's bringing in $100 million in sports, and the lion's share of that is football, if momentum is down in football and people stop showing up to games and are not buying $4 coats and they're not buying $80 sweatshirts, and they lose, how about if the revenue goes down 10%? 10% of $100 million is $10 million. Where's that money coming from? These are all money and business decisions now. It's not personal.
Right. So is that why it seems like that the whole North Carolina cheating scandal isn't as big as it could be, as if, say, this came out of Alabama or Florida State or even Ole Miss on their current rise?
The thing in North Carolina, I think it's a scandal, but I think once North Carolina fixes it, they fix it. The only thing you can do as college sports is make sure the people that perpetrated the crime or perpetrated the rule violations aren't there anymore. Vacating is stupid. None of that stuff makes any sense. I don't even know who it makes feel good. But the only thing you can do at the college level is make sure the people who perpetrated the rule violations aren't there anymore.
So vacating, is that why?
And let me say this, because people get mad at me.
Okay.
And I got an ugly letter from a member of the NAACP a few weeks ago, because on some level, we need to get away from this thing of exploiting players.
Right.
If you got a 20-year-old who is able to go to war and die for his country, but all of a sudden now he doesn't have the wherewithal to decide if I should take a paper class where I know that I'm not getting the education that I should be getting, where I know I'm not getting the skill training to make a life for myself, and then 5 years from now when I'm not playing basketball in Turkey, I come back and now I'm mad and I want to sue the school and talk bad to the school because they didn't educate me. Take care of yourself.
Yeah.
I'm sick of hearing about the student-athlete being exploited that way. I don't care about signatures. I think that should go away. I think they should. I was totally fine with the Ed O'Bannon case. But at some level, the greatest power God gave us is the power to choose. And you need to choose whether you want to be a winner or whether you want to be a loser. And a lot of those kids are choosing losing because they take the easy way out,
right,
and they don't get the education. And then once they don't get the education, they want to blame everybody else because they were 22 years old and somebody should have taken care of them. Ridiculous.
Well, this whole Todd Gurley thing, and we'll go into that here. He's allegedly going around campus with free Gurley shirts on. Georgia and Mark Richt, they instantly suspended him just with a hint of a possible autograph scandal over him. Is it a thing where Georgia said, we have a good team, we have a chance to go for this playoff and go for this national title, so we don't want any of this stink around us? You know, it's the thing where Georgia, they jumped the gun on this one rather than letting stuff play out. And is Gurley doing himself no favors wearing free Gurley shirts on now?
You know what? Here's the issue. I have no problem with Gurley playing. And this is what I've always said about rules. I went to Abilene Christian University. When I first got there, you couldn't wear shorts. Girls couldn't wear
really?
Shorts. You couldn't go to dance clubs. You couldn't go to any place that made over 50% of their money by selling alcohol.
Hmm.
So you couldn't go to any bars. You couldn't go to anything. And, I mean, the dean of the university back in 1990 would walk around and write down license plates on cars and then run those against the school system to see if any students were there. And if you were, you got in trouble.
Hmm.
They had an 11 o'clock curfew, all this kind of stuff. So when I got there, I actually had more rules there than I had at home.
Wow.
My parents kind of raised me really strict, and by the time I was 17, 18, I wasn't doing anything stupid, so I kind of didn't have rules. So I made a conscious decision once I had been there about a year, and I said, you know what? I'm almost a straight-A business student. I'm taking honors courses. I'm an All-American athlete. I'm representing this university well. If I want to go dance to Belle Biv DeVoe's Poison, I'm going. So I picked up and I started going to the club and I just didn't care. And the dean called me in and I finally told the dean when he called me in and said, I hear you've been going to clubs. I say, I have been. He goes, you know what our rules are. And I said, you know what? I'm almost a straight A student. I'm representing this university really well. I'm an All-American athlete. I know, even if you don't know, that me going to a dance club or me wearing shorts doesn't break or make my salvation and going to heaven. So I just decided to break the rule. So if you want to kick me out, go ahead. Right. Because there'll be 100 schools I can transfer to in 5 minutes. Now, here's the deal. I voluntarily broke those rules, but I have to own the consequences. So I was prepared that if they kicked me out, and they didn't, and now those rules are gone because a bunch of church kids started saying, you know what, I'm not going to school with all these rules. I just go to Texas A&M and join Aggies for Christ. I'm not doing all these rules. So they had to change all those rules, and now they have no curfew. Now you can go to do whatever you want to do because it was silly, but I had to own that. So now Todd Gurley has to own the fact that he broke the rules, even if they're unjust rules. And I think they're unjust rules, and Jordan's got to figure out if they can get them back.
Once again, on the program with us, Sean Adams, who just said he went to school on the set of Footloose, it seems like. You know, the playoff, it's going to come out here later on, I think this week, or, you know, even we're taping here on a Tuesday right now. It looks like that there's an article, and we'll, you know, it's kind of with Gurley, Jameis Winston. It looks like Florida State, they may be left out of the Final Four right now, despite being undefeated since, what, 2013? Fair or not fair, FSU being left out of this playoff, even though they could end up the season another 11-0?
Well, here's the deal, and I do believe that whatever comes out tonight, when it comes out, it won't stay that way.
No,
there's gonna be changes. So even if Mississippi and Mississippi State are both in there, they have to play in the Egg Bowl later.
Right.
So, I mean, there's games to be played. So if I had to look at it today, in my mind, Florida State has to be there. I don't care what you think about Jameis. I don't care if you think he's the scum of the earth. If he's playing, he has to be part of the equation. I don't know that I like everybody that plays for my favorite pro football team, the San Francisco 49ers, but I cheer for the jersey. So I think Florida State should be there. I obviously think Mississippi State's going to be there. And if I have to pick, I'll probably look at Alabama to be a third, and maybe Oregon. I mean, they got a big win over Michigan State, even though they have a loss. The thing is, you got, what is it, 18 one-loss teams?
Right.
And this is the issue that you're going to run into. Because I think Florida State's going to run the table. I don't think they're going to lose. I think Notre Dame was their last opportunity to lose. So I think they're going to win. And I don't think Mississippi State will. So I think what you're going to have is one undefeated team, and then you're going to end up having to choose three teams from about 10 to 11 one-loss teams.
What's your thoughts on LSU being the team that's kind of laying in the weeds right now with two losses? They get Alabama this week. They have, if they can overtake, I think they still have they just beat Ole Miss, and they have that one loss against Mississippi State. Is there a chance to where you see them as a dark horse, a playoff contender?
Yeah, the problem is I still think the records don't come into play, and that's one of the biggest issues with the playoff. Once they get in the room, and we understand that it's a pretty complex system, and they're gonna rank their 25 random their teams in random order, and then the six teams that end up on everybody's list the most is gonna be the top six, and then they're gonna vote for the top three, and then they're gonna bring in another three to that bottom three, and that's how they'll grab the last team. I mean, it's a mess to do, but the bottom line is it's very subjective, because what might matter to Condoleezza Rice is the strength of schedule. Well, they beat them, they beat them, they beat them, they beat them. And then what might happen with somebody else is, oh, man, they blew these teams out. So in his mind, marching a victory is gone. And then to Jeff Long, it might be, but they have no losses.
Right.
So everybody has their own opinion before they even get to start ranking the team. So that's going to be the mess that it is. It's funny to me that they're all sitting in this room in Dallas right now, and I tweeted a few minutes ago a picture. They're all sitting in this room. They got all these the computer monitors up. Some of the members of the media, I saw Dennis Dodd, George Schaefer from USA Today, and they're all kind of sitting there, and they got these things up on the wall, and everybody's got these monitors. It looks like a war room.
It does. I saw that at Sean. Yeah.
it's amateur sports. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's amateur sports. The Olympic model got rid of this foolishness years ago. It's not amateur sports. Amateur in this context just means one group trying to hoard all the money. That's it.
Well, what do you think of
this? It's not amateur to anybody except the athlete. Nike's getting rich. AT&T's getting rich. The college football playoffs making money. The bowl games are making money.
Oh, yeah.
And most of them don't even give to charity. The administration gets to live in the nicest neighborhoods in town. Coaches are millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, you got coordinators that make almost a million or more than a million now. It's a profession to everybody except the student athlete.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, there's a story that came out this week with Nick Saban's house. He makes, I think, $3 million a year, and his house got paid off by the boosters. But what do you think of this theory here? I floated this out in last week's episode, that the NCAA is a mafia, and that's why this whole, you know, pay for signing off your autographs gets all these athletes in such hot water, and that the NCAA doesn't get a cut of the money. So in that realm, if me watching the entire series of The Sopranos – you don't pay me for your likeness, then I'm gonna make sure that you don't get paid at all.
Right, and if you think about the Saban deal you just brought up. Nick Saban, the boosters paid $3 million to pay off his house, but if they buy an athlete a cheeseburger at McDonald's, it's an NCAA violation, and that athlete can be deemed ineligible.
Oh yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah. It's very, very weird how that happens. They actually just amended the rule where you can put cream cheese on a bagel now, right?
Yeah. So now it's not, because that made it a meal instead of a snack.
It did. Yes. And, you know, that cream cheese at Panera Bread. You know, it's obviously it's a supermodel diet right there. You know, just adding that on is extra calories that are unwanted. But, you know, we're coming up here towards where we got to let you go. I'm going to throw out two coaches here for bring it back to from where we started at with Michigan and Florida. Any chance here that Muschamp, after Muschamp was let go, the new Florida head coach is Lane Kiffin?
No,
you don't think he goes in and charms off the athletic department heads at Florida after he leads Alabama to another national title?
Yeah, the issue is, I don't know. I don't know if there's that much convincing. I think he needs to. There's still, you know, salt on the wound from what he did in Tennessee within the SEC, even though that's one of Florida's rivals.
Interesting.
I just have a hard. He still got some stink on him from the Raiders. He's got stink on him from Tennessee. He's got stink on him from USC. And now I think he's got to get away from it for a while. He's got to make sure – he's got to have success, I think, away from it for 2 or 3 years before he talks himself into another job. I think Florida has to go get somebody who's a head coach.
Okay.
I don't know if Dan Mullen would take it, but you got to go to Dan Mullen first in Mississippi State.
Okay. What about, you know
– he was the offensive coordinator when they won the national championships with Tim Tebow. Before he went to Mississippi State, I think he'd be a fit. Now, the problem is Jeremy Foley, the athletic director of Florida, and Dan Mullen, they bumped heads a little bit while they were at Florida. So, I don't know, but the word I hear is that Jeremy Foley's not hiring this next head coach. It will be the president of the university. So, that could kind of maneuver around the whole Dan Mullen issue.
Well, speaking of ADs that are on the outs, Michigan's AD seems like the fan base wants him gone as well for the football's shortcomings. There's a guy that you're very familiar with out in San Francisco with Jim Harbaugh. Does he leave the 49ers to go to Michigan to take over that program?
Yeah, he very well could. And let's be honest, Jim Harbaugh does not get along at all with the York family who owns the 49ers at all. They are barely on speaking terms now. So I think, you know, he went to the high school across the street from the big house. So did his brother John. I think it's a natural fit. He played for the Wolverines. I think it's a natural fit. I think he might have a better fit in college. Guys with that personality, and he's a lot like Saban. He's a grinder. He's all about ball.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a player's coach at all for the most part. Those guys struggle in the NFL. You know, Saban struggled in the NFL. Steve Spurrier, the dictator, struggled in the NFL. Tom Coughlin was the dictator with the Giants. How did he have success? He had to change his whole demeanor
right.
and how he talked to people. Because you can talk to a guy who's hopeful, and you can talk down to him, you can undress him, you can curse him out if you want to at the college level because he's got that carrot of professional sports in front of him. And he allows that stuff because he's got the carrot. Now, once he crosses over, once he crosses the burning sand, now he's got the million-dollar contract. He makes more than the coach.
Right.
You're not talking to me that way. So that dictator stuff does not work in the NFL.
Well, what about this one here? You're married, have kids. I'm married, no kids, one kid on the way. You tell your wife, hey, we're leaving a nice area in San Francisco, or in this case, Austin, Texas, and we're moving to Ann Arbor, Michigan, where it's 10 degrees outside starting in November. How's that going over in your family?
It would not go over well at all. And that's the thing. I'm not a cold weather guy, and it's one of the struggles now. Everybody knows how the North got great back in the 50s and 60s when blacks couldn't play in the South.
Yeah.
When Bubba Smith, who was from Beaumont, Texas, his dad was his coach. He wanted to play at the University of Texas, and Del Royo said, I'd love to, but my university will not allow me to have black players. The University of Texas, no black players. So guys like Michigan State, that's when Lou Holtz was at the University of Minnesota, and they started going down south to grab these great athletes
mm-hmm.
and pull them up north. You know, all that stuff don't happen in 2014. Bigger stadiums, more commitment, better tailgating, better environment, closer to home so mom and dad can see me play, and I don't have to wear a parka all winter.
It's why I moved from Pittsburgh down to Austin. I could not take another winter of shoveling and ice and turning left in snow, but ended my car fishtailing to the right. So, all right, we'll get you out of here on this one. Plug the radio show, the Twitter, and all your Longhorn Network stuff, on the way out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm always on Twitter, @ThatSean. I tweet probably way too much, at least my family says I do. And, of course, my radio show is on AM 1300 The Zone, The Adams Theory, every day, Central, 2 to 4.
All right, back from, the interview with Sean. And, Todd, I brought up to Sean about LSU. They look good against Ole Miss. They have two losses, and they're currently in the teens in the playoff standings. You know, what's your thoughts on them being the sneaky favorite to sneak into that playoff, as a two-loss team?
Well, I thought LSU was dead in the water, but they, and credit that to Les Miles, because that team has lost everything this year. They lost their both the leading receivers, a leading rusher, and of course Zach Mettenberger is now in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought they were, I thought they were. And of course, we've all seen. He's in the NFL, but I think he's in it for, the Celtics, not so much the quarterback part. But
right.
I thought they were dead in the water, especially after that Auburn game. That was really an embarrassment and a debacle for LSU.
Right.
And they've kind of resurfaced, and, hey, they're as good as anybody. They recruit at a level where they're always going to have a legitimate shot each game. And I think if there's a two-loss team that can play spoiler, even in SEC West, now that Ole Miss has dropped a game, and Mississippi State has to play both Alabama and Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if there's one team that can make their way, kind of back their way into the SEC championship game, it's LSU.
And if they do that, they can take on a one-loss Georgia team in that the SEC, title game. What's keeping them back from having that win against Ole Miss, against Alabama, and then against Georgia, all of which will be top, top five teams, top 10, because Alabama was six.
Well, that's sort of the built-in, I think people call it the SEC advantage, where if you win out in the SEC, you've all but assured yourself a spot. And not a team like Missouri or some fluke chance Kentucky winning the SEC championship. But if, Georgia, LSU, one of these teams wins out in the SEC, they basically punch your ticket to the playoff. At least that's how I look at it from right now, with a little bit of football left to play. But I think LSU, if they win out, they can build a resume to get right in that playoff picture. Because those are a lot of big-time programs you just listed, and they're all on their way to the SEC championship game.
Well, let me play a little who would you rather with you between some of these one-loss teams, and we'll say in this hypothetical situation, LSU does run the table and wins the SEC conference. Would you rather have in the playoff LSU or Michigan State?
LSU.
LSU, Kansas State.
I'll still go with LSU.
All right. What about TCU?
Definitely LSU in that case.
And finally, and this is the big one here, because this is one I think that would raise the biggest flags if they happen to go with one loss as well, and we'll say that Mississippi State and Alabama and Florida State stay the same. You can only take one, LSU or Notre Dame.
I think this is the strongest case, and I think depending on the number of SEC teams, if there's at least one in that playoff already, I think you've got to go with Notre Dame in that case.
Interesting. And that's, you know, because of the wins with Arizona State and also USC left on their slate?
Yeah, Notre Dame, you know, you can say a lot of things about the Irish, but they always have a tough schedule each year. And if they do make it into November with one loss, I think, yeah, they got a very good shot. And in that case, I think they have a very good argument to jump LSU.
And, you know, we'll stick with this LSU thing for the last question with this one. Say they do go on with two losses, win the SEC championship. Is there a way that they still win the conference and, you know, have two losses, but yet they're not the SEC representative that goes into the playoff?
That will depend on, I think, especially how the Mississippi schools end up. Alabama, just my thought that they were back and ready to kind of take this thing by the reins. They didn't look so too hot last week.
Right.
That SEC West is just brutal, and we've talked about it each week, that we saw this. Now, it's funny we're talking about LSU. We kind of saw this a couple of years ago in that disastrous snooze fest LSU-Alabama
right.
National Championship game where the, you know, quote-unquote best team in the SEC wasn't, in voters' eyes, wasn't really the, you know, record-wise or championship-wise best team in the SEC. So you just never know. The SEC West this year has been a beast unlike any other. I can't think of a time in recent memory where a division, not a conference, but, you know, a single division of a conference has been this strong.
And, you know, there's going to be one team that's going to completely screw all this up, and their squad that is currently on, what, a 30-game SEC losing streak? That's Arkansas. There's going to be one game during this stretch where they come in and they just wreck everything up because it's Arkansas and they're due for a win. I'm just not sure which game that's going to be. You know, I'm trying to pull up their schedule right here. And their final slate, I know LSU is on that schedule. Mississippi State is this week. I mean, hell, your Missouri Tigers are, you know, the following week after that. But it's at Mississippi State, home to LSU, home to Ole Miss. God, you give them a chance in any one of those three games to break that streak and, you know, end, you know, ruin one of these three team seasons.
I give them a chance in all three because, like you said, at some point they're going to win another game in the SEC.
Right.
They've got a competent coach. I mean, you can say what you want about his time at Wisconsin, whether he or the Barry Alvarez were calling the shots, but he's not an idiot. They've got a great rushing attack. They're a legitimate SEC team. So at some point they're going to win a game. And like I said last week, if you're a coach, I kind of want the team that's won 30 straight games in conference coming into town as opposed to the team that's lost 30 straight coming into town. Because
if
both things are equal, you know, at some point that team that's won all those games is going to lose. And at some point that team that's just lost every week, and we've seen Arkansas, you know, come this close, you know, really a possession or two away from really shaking things up already this year, they're going to win a game.
Yeah.
And I think this, hey, maybe it's this weekend. That could be Mississippi State, kind of like Ole Miss. Maybe they're looking for their opportunity to kind of stub their toe a little bit. I don't know. But, yeah, I think they've got a shot in all three of those games. And really, if they go this year without winning a game in the SEC, I think that's unfortunate for their fans. But I also think that that's kind of a poor indictment on Bielema as a coach. And you know, even though I think he's other people give him credit for, there's no excuse for them losing out in the SEC again this year.
And, you know, I said this in the previous episodes, I think that the one game that is going to trip up and send this whole entire SEC West into a complete cluster bleep is that week before they play Mississippi State at home, Ole Miss has to go to Little Rock to play Arkansas. That I think that's going to be the one that does it. It's the stereotypical trap game of we're looking forward to our biggest rival, You know, we have to stay somewhat healthy, and it's going to be a game that's going to determine not only the winner of the SEC West, but also the person who plays in that playoff game. I think that's where Arkansas gets their victory and just, you know, sends Ole Miss into two losses, sends, you know, them playing Mississippi State, with that could just completely blow that completely up. And I think that's where you see a big monkey wrench into everything. Staying with the SEC, Todd Gurley, he's got a 4-game suspension for, you know, his autograph scandal for making $3,000 on his own name. He's got to pay back a portion of that money at the NCAA, thus keeping my theory that the NCAA is a complete mafia. And I think it kind of helps Georgia in that they get Gurley back for the Auburn game, and they get him back from 4 or 5 weeks or 6 weeks now rested. You know, Todd, does this help? Not help, but what's this do for Georgia's chances, is not only as an SEC, you know, title contender, but a national title contender?
Well, we kind of said at LSU, if you go into an SEC championship game with one loss and you win that SEC title, Georgia is right back in the picture for a playoff spot. And we've said it a couple weeks now since Gurley sat out. No one player, not even Jameis Winston, is as important to their team as Todd Gurley.
Right.
I mean, he, you know, before this whole ordeal came down on him, he was absolutely dominating football this year. And I think that this is, he's coming back at just the right time. But you never know how you can just plug this guy right back into your system.
Interesting.
The good thing for Georgia, they've got Nick Chubb right behind them, a very capable, more than capable back to give him a puncher's chance against Auburn, more than a puncher's chance. But I'd be wary of taking just putting Gurley back in after he's taken some time out and hasn't really been in the rhythm, that game day rhythm, as the other backs in Georgia's backfield, that he's going to be right back to where he was before he left. But, yeah, it's about time. And really, I'm rooting for Georgia, and even though it's detrimental to my team's chances,
right,
I'm kind of rooting for Georgia with this appeal because, look, they sat them out 2 games on their own accord, not the NCAA. They were proactive in this and sat him out in the middle of their conference season for what he had done. And yes, it was wrong. We went over this last week. You know, he has nobody to blame but himself for the position he put his teammates in.
Right.
But really, you know, what I just it's ridiculous at this point. I mean, I get it. He broke the rules, but he's been punished. He sat 2 games. Is it 3 games now?
Two games.
He sat 2 games.
I think that's why they gave him 4. And then that way, this way he can be back by Auburn because he's already served two of the. It's like jail. They give you time served for when the sentence finally comes down.
I think at this point you got to just drop it. I mean, what really? Just let the guy get back and play. Don't ruin these other 2 games. I think are going to ruin his chances at the Heisman. I really do because, you know, even as great of a player as he is, even the best player in college football can't just magically make up, you know, 4 games of 0 yard production. I'm ready for this thing to be over. It was stupid on his part to break the rules. The rule is stupid in itself, but I think 2 games is more than enough for this.
Now, was it smart? I know we talked about Rick and, you know, how strict he is and shutting him down immediately. Did he save face in that not allowing him to play, and it eventually came out that he did accept $3,000, in that it helps their chances in the voters' eyes and the playoff selection committee that, you know, had they played him and say they had to vacate those wins, it helps Georgia's case out to make the playoff.
Well, yes, if they had to vacate those wins, then, you know, they're not getting in the playoff without having to give back the trophy anyway.
Right.
I think it was the right move by Georgia. I really think you've got to give Mark Richt credit. I think you got to give the Georgia Athletic Department credit for staying on top of the ball because nobody knew what went on more than those guys. They probably knew at the beginning of the season or whenever this stuff happened. You know, they hear these rumblings. Coaches aren't stupid.
Right.
They're thinking of their jobs and their paycheck. They try to, you know, hold these things off as long as they can. But really, to me, it's unheard of for a team of Georgia's stature, a program of their stature, an SEC team that's vying for an SEC title, a spot in the national title playoff, for them to really take the lead on this like that. I don't think you'd ever see that from Florida State or Oklahoma. or some of these other programs. So, yeah, I definitely think that they should be, you know, they should get the credit for all they've done in this situation.
I agree. Coming up here, final 10 minutes of the show for this week. Last week, TCU hangs 82 on Texas Tech. I mean, that's impressive. Is that more embarrassing for Texas Tech or more embarrassing for Texas Tech or impressive that TCU could hang 82?
More embarrassing for Texas Tech. Chris Kingsbury, who a year ago was the hottest young coach in the country, coaching prospect in the country, is looking at his peace list maybe relatively soon in Lubbock. I was shocked at when he went, he bolted from Alabama to Texas Tech. I thought that was kind of puzzling, but he's a Texas Tech guy.
Yeah.
He's already had fire his defensive coordinator for showing up to work high this year, which is a black mark no matter what kind of program you run. They obviously can't play any defense, which is, you know, a staple of Texas Tech if you've watched them over the past couple of years. But the problem is, they don't have Graham Harrell and Crabtree and those guys back, so they can't score any points. Cliff Kingsbury has really done a complete 180 and really lowered his stock, and I don't think he can endure many more beatings like that in Lubbock, except for the fact that I believe Texas Tech is paying him $3 million-plus for like the next 3 or 4 years. So they really got no choice. But, yeah, this was just an embarrassment for Texas Tech. I mean, we all know that TCU is one of the best stories in college football this year. They've had a tremendous turnaround after just an awful year on and off the field.
Right.
But, geez, that was just—I don't care what—I don't care if you're FCS team. Giving up 82 points
right.
is inexcusable.
Right. They shot—I just like the story that they used up all their pyro for the entire year on that game. On the game, one game, they used up all their fireworks. For scoring 82. That's just, it's unbelievable. But this week, they can rebound because Tech can rebound because they have University of Texas coming to Lubbock. Is this game basically a play-in game just for a bowl opportunity?
Oh, yeah, definitely. If you're a fan of either of these teams, depending on how you feel about your head coach, you're hoping that, this is your shot at a bowl. Texas Tech, they've got to look good this game after what happened last week. For Texas, they've really kind of flubbed the ball this year and had a lot of controversy off the field with their new head coach Strong. But yeah, this is a game where you can salvage a little bit of respect heading into the winter.
Right. So speaking of this week, we touched briefly on Florida State and Louisville, a little bit on LSU Alabama, but real quick in the LSU Alabama game. Is the loser of that? Not loser, because obviously if LSU loses, they're eliminated not only from the SEC but playoff contention. If Alabama loses, are they eliminated from playoff contention?
Well, they've still got a couple of chances either to stub their toe and kind of crawl to the finish line or make
right.
their case. They've still got Mississippi State and Auburn. So if they lose this game to LSU, listen, at two losses, they still got a shot to beat Mississippi State, who could still be a top five team when they play on the number 15th. And then they've got the trips, or they're actually hosting Auburn this year in the Iron Bowl. And that's another chance for them to really kind of end the season with an exclamation point. So I think this, for Alabama, it's not really the desired outcome to lose this game. Obviously, you don't lose any game, but it's going to make things really tough for you to make the playoffs. But they've got they've got two games left after this where they can really kind of, right the wrong.
I mean, kind of hard, though. Unless they had to win those two games, the right the wrongs, like you said, plus get lucky and hope that Ole Miss and Mississippi State knock each other out so they have the clear path to play either Georgia or your Missouri Tigers. And, in fact, if your Tigers do happen to go in, I don't think that's going to be enough for a two-loss SEC team to, especially from the West, to go into that playoff game. Am I crazy for thinking that if there's a two-loss SEC West team playing against Missouri instead of Georgia, it's not enough to make the playoff?
I think if that's going to be enough for any team, it'd be Alabama, because they'll get the biggest of the doubt from the voters.
Interesting.
So they're going to need some help. They're going to need to win both those games. If they lose this weekend, they need to win the Mississippi State game, we need to win Iron Bowl. But being Alabama, they're going to get kind of that Notre Dame treatment, the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
So I think if they win the SEC title game in this fashion, that might be just enough to weasel their way in.
Now, what about another knockout game that could completely eliminate a conference? TCU has to go to Morgantown and play the Mountaineers when Baylor just did that, was about 2 weeks ago, and got knocked off. If West Virginia pulls another upset off, does that finally put the nail in the coffin on the Big 12's chances at playing in that playoff?
I think Kansas State still has a strong shot at winning the playoff outside of TCU. But, yeah, this is definitely a crucial game for TCU. This is a must-win. I'm not sold on West Virginia being the number 20 team in the nation, but they are right now, so it's still a great win for your resume. Yeah, this is definitely a huge game. If TCU loses this game, they're out of contention for the playoff. Kansas State has an outside shot, but, yeah, this would definitely be a pretty lethal blow to the Big 12's chances at a playoff spot.
And one last elimination game, Auburn goes to Oxford and plays Ole Miss. Is that an elimination game?
It is. This is a game where we're going to really see what Ole Miss is made of this year. They're a two-point favorite, which is basically a pick'em
right
at home. And this is a game where we're really going to see if this Ole Miss team is just a good story or if they're like a real threat for the national title. I'm going to go with Auburn in this one because I think that Ole Miss is kind of starting to crash back to earth. I think they're a very good team. I don't think that they're a top-five team, and I think Auburn is a legitimate top-five team. And I think they've got their eyes once again on the national title and maybe some revenge against Florida State.
Interesting. Yeah, because they see right now that they're technically both in the playoff and they can come to the end. So I can see how they might play in the look-ahead game. One last thing for the conferences, Pac-12. They're always lurking. No one seems to talk about them because of West Coast, whatever, and the time frame. Stanford goes to Eugene to play Oregon. That looks to be a tough one. Arizona goes to UCLA, and Utah goes to Arizona State. So coming out of this weekend, does the Pac-12 still have a team that is in playoff contention?
Oregon is the best shot, but I'm actually very optimistic on Arizona State. They've still got the game at Arizona. I believe they're a better team than Arizona. They could pick up a huge win this weekend against Utah.
Right.
They've got a shot against Notre Dame, who's a top 10 team. And then they've got a kind of, a little break at Oregon State against Washington State. I think Arizona State is a team to really watch out of the Pac-12 if Oregon drops this one. But if you're a conference pride type of guy and you're wanting the Pac-12 to be represented, because they really are the second best conference in the country,
right,
Oregon is your best shot.
So last question here, and we'll end the show on this week. Yes or no, the top three, whenever we come to tape next Wednesday, are all going to be SEC West teams, being Mississippi State, a combination of Mississippi State, Auburn, Alabama, and Ole Miss.
I believe Ole Miss loses. So
okay.
I think that this would be enough to boot them out, so I'll go with no.
So then in that case, the top three will be then Mississippi State, Auburn, Alabama, because FSU loses to Louisville.
Hey, I would love for FSU to lose to Louisville, but I don't see that one happening.
I don't either, just because I really want to see Jameis go back-to-back for the Heisman, just because he is the best player in college football. And I would like to see them rub their nose, just like the Miami Hurricane teams of the late 80s, early 90s did to the establishment, of saying, we're going to do our thing, don't worry about us. Like, no matter what you throw at us, we're going to prevail and hold up the trophy at the end of the year. So I'm all in for FSU. All in. All in, Todd.
Well, I think Todd Gurley is the best player in college football. I think he's kind of disqualified himself in the Heisman. But if I had a vote, they're stupid enough to give me a vote. Right now, it'd be for Dak Prescott, quarterback of Mississippi State.
What about Abdullah at Nebraska? The kid's setting records, I swear, like every week.
Yeah, he's definitely earned his spot. He'll make a trip to New York, definitely.
All right. And I think so right now, I said we'll end on the other top three, but your New York Heisman, taking the trip to New York City for the Heisman is?
We'll go Dak Prescott.
Okay.
Amir Abdullah.
Right.
Jameis Winston.
Yes.
And I was going to say, I'll go with Amari Cooper, Alabama.
Hmm, interesting. I guess if he comes through these last three games with huge numbers, because God knows that Yeldon isn't doing it for them, I guess if he's their only option for offense, that will earn him a trip. But I like just the first three and only three for that trip, just like the Colin Klein, Tao, and Manziel year.
Well, it's usually, you usually have a good idea who's one and two, and the rest are kind of filler.
Right. No, I'm sure.
Last year's Manziel and Winston, and you know, the other people didn't really have a shot.
Right. I'm sure they'll find some. Bo Wallace, if he happens to lead Ole Miss to one or two losses, I'm sure he'll get a vote there. Just because they always seem to throw in the white quarterback just as a filler.
Hey, when I was in school, we had a bunch of those: Tebow, Sam Bradford.
That's right.
Chase Daniel from Missouri. So,
right.
Yeah, you know, don't overlook, you know, the as they say, gritty, you know, dirty, crappy, gutsy white quarterback.
Just like last year in A.J. McCarron. They gave him as a Lifetime Achievement Award trip to New York.
Yeah.
All right. That's the show for this week. Todd, thanks as always, and we'll catch you next week. Thank you for downloading this week's episode of the TJ and Todd's Tailgate. For more information on the show, go to PlaceBeatNation.com, or you can follow the show on Twitter at TJ Macklin, at Todd Gessling, or at PlaceToBeNation.